Welcome to another episode of the Oncology On The Go podcast. I'm your host, Roman Fabricator. Cancer Network spoke with Dr. Michael P. Bogenschutz, director of the NYU Langone Center for Psychedelic Medicine and professor of psychiatry at NYU Grossman School of Medicine, about psilocybin-assisted psychotherapy, or PAP, in managing psychological challenges associated with serious cancer diagnoses following the publication of a pooled analysis of two phase 2 trials assessing the regimen in this patient population. He began by touching upon the significance of the results, highlighting an improvement in multiple psychiatric symptoms. Then, Bogenschutz discussed the potential for PAP to reduce an unmet need for patients seeking effective medication to manage cancer-related psychological challenges. Next, he discussed PAP implementation into clinical practice for patients undergoing cancer-related psychological challenges. Bogenschutz then highlighted adverse effects associated with psilocybin use before delving into the importance of psychotherapy as a means of supplementing the use of the agent. He concluded by highlighting the lasting effects of psilocybin dosing, as well as areas for future research in assessing PAP. Psilocybin-assisted psychotherapy was assessed by a pooled analysis of two phase 2 crossover trials. Can you touch upon the significance of the results?
Yeah, so this publication was a follow-up to the two primary publications, which came out in 2016. And those were two independent, but fairly similar, small randomized controlled trials testing the efficacy of psilocybin for depression and anxiety symptoms related to a life-threatening and potentially fatal cancer diagnosis. And those two studies combined, independently, were pretty small. So there was value in combining the trials and both looking at the pooled outcomes, but also focusing on a broader array of outcomes than were primarily assessed in the initial paper. So the papers were really focusing on the depression and anxiety symptoms. And this paper, looking at the two studies together, also focused on a broader array of psychiatric symptoms that people may have been experiencing.
Thank you for that background. What unmet need would this treatment help to reduce?
There really aren't any effective medications to help people who are struggling with psychological challenges presented by a serious cancer diagnosis. And people have major depression. They can be treated with antidepressants. They can be treated with medicines for anxiety. The antidepressants don't appear to be particularly helpful in this population. And of course, they don't really address what the underlying cause is in many cases, which is facing this existential crisis of one's own possible or probable death in the near future. And so in some ways, I tend to think about this situation as a kind of adjustment reaction. People are faced with a very challenging situation, and they may become symptomatic. They may become really incapacitated because of the psychological challenges. And the psilocybin-assisted treatment, in some ways acts as a medication, like any other medication, to basically treat the symptoms. So there are studies for major depression and independent of a cancer diagnosis demonstrating enduring effects on depressive symptoms for weeks to months after a single dose of psilocybin. But in this population, there's also one of the ideas, at least behind how this works, is that the experiences that people have under the influence of psilocybin may help them better to come to terms with the reality of death and what that means, and to find some acceptance and meaning in the face of this very challenging situation.
Thank you for that comprehensive response. You provided a perspective that you would not have accessed merely reading through the paper. So I thank you for that unique insight. How might you see PAP use being implemented into clinical practice for patients with cancer?
We're still at the early stages of demonstrating safety and efficacy. Of course, patients with cancer are generally already, they're engaged in medical treatment and they have a team that they're working with to treat their cancer. And, in that context, it's normal for patients to be referred for psychiatric evaluation, if they are having symptoms related or to the cancer diagnosis or otherwise. And so I think, this is something that would need to be incorporated into the behavioral health aspects of comprehensive cancer treatment. And that could be done either by building the capacity within the cancer center for providing the psilocybin-assisted treatment, or by developing referral networks whereby the cancer center could refer to a local provider who's skilled and has whatever credentials ultimately are required to use psilocybin clinically and have enough experience with cancer patients that they're able to provide that service on a referral basis. So these are, I mean, they're really good questions, and they're in the one hand, we're certainly not at the point of implementation, but on the other hand, it is important to be thinking about the challenges and sort of unique aspects of this treatment that will need to be dealt with in order to make it widely available to patients who may benefit.
Obviously, anxiety was covered to a certain extent in the manuscript, but are there any additional toxicities or adverse effects associated with psilocybin that stand out to you?
Well, there. I mean, certainly there are risks and potential adverse effects, and the main ones really have to do with the acute mind-altering effects of the drug. So during the session, people's consciousness is altered quite dramatically, and for some patients, and it's not very predictable who it might be, but some people can become quite overwhelmed, fearful, fear that they're losing their mind or that they are in fact dying, or can be, have other kinds of, transient paranoid thoughts or other kind of delusional or strange ideas. And those generally almost always resolve within the acute period. Once the drug effects wear off after 6 hours or so, most people are back to a perfectly normal state of consciousness. So there are occasionally residual symptoms that can take longer to resolve, but that's quite uncommon. But it's quite common for people to have very strong and sometimes distressing emotional states during the acute phase of the treatment. So that's why it's very important to have skilled clinicians with the patient for the entirety of the drug administration session, which is usually 8 hours or so. Beyond that, the medical risks of psilocybin are quite low in carefully screened patients. Four patients with cancer have been quite ill because of their cancer. There is not a lot of toxicity. The main potential issues are moderate sympathomimetic effects of psilocybin. So blood pressure may go up by 20 points systolic, maybe 15 diastolic. On average, it varies. And heart rate will go up a bit, usually not above 100, but put some strain on the heart. So people with coronary artery disease, high risk of stroke, generally have been excluded from the trials with psilocybin. But other than that, physiologically speaking, it's a very safe drug, as far as we know.
Is there anything else related to psilocybin-assisted psychotherapy or the pooled analysis study that you would like to highlight that we have not gone over as of yet?
One of the interesting things about psilocybin is that there may be some disorder-specific effects, such as, what we talked about in cancer, that, there may be a particular value in its helping people to work on a psychological level with, the challenges of reacting to a cancer diagnosis. There seem to be effects on major depression also that may have a, sort of more of a biological basis, where the best understanding currently is that psilocybin enhances the potential for neuroplasticity in some specific ways and in some non-specific ways. And there's a sort of a general antidepressant, anti-anxiety, and perhaps, in the short term, anti-addictive effect in terms of just improving mood, improving sense of well-being, decreasing the craving to be in some other kind of state. But it also appears to, in a more nonspecific way, enhance the ability of people to learn new things, think in different ways, see themselves and the world in different ways. So that's where also the psychotherapy comes in, because there may be some effects of the drug that just happen automatically because of what the drug does to the brain. And there may be other effects of the drug that require ongoing work by the patient, collaboration with a therapist or some kind of a program to help them make the behavioral changes, the cognitive changes, the life changes that will help them make the changes that they want to make in their life overall. So it's interesting in that way, I think, for those of us who are studying this, because of the interactions between the basic pharmacology and the intention of the patient and the therapeutic environment in which the treatment is occurring. The other thing to stress about psilocybin in general and psychedelic treatments even more broadly is that the effects of a single dose of the drug in many cases will persist for weeks and months after the administration. Of course, this is very different from any other medications that we're using for in psychiatry. There, there appear to be long-term changes that can occur as a result of these relatively brief treatments. So that's exciting. There are also a lot of implementation challenges that have to do with the need to have a person, have the patient sitting under close supervision by trained professionals for a whole day to receive a single treatment. And there's a lot of unanswered questions about, how many treatments are needed, what the ideal environment is, what the in psychotherapeutic platform, what aspects of the psychotherapy are really necessary and which ones are not so necessary, and how can this be done in a way that's scalable and as affordable as possible and available to all kinds of people, not just people who have enough money to pay the considerable cost that will likely be attached to these treatments. So those are all things about psilocybin in general. One other thing I wanted to mention about the particular paper that we're talking about is that the particular value of this paper was to look at this broad spectrum of psychopathology, including not just the depression and anxiety, but other kind of aspects that are associated with both mood and anxiety and also psychotic disorders. And one of the very reassuring findings was that there was no increase in psychosis or paranoia associated with the administration of psilocybin in this study. Patients who were psychotic to begin with would have been screened out of the study, of course, but there was no increase, and there actually was a, numerically speaking, a decrease in whatever symptoms of paranoia and psychosis people were having after they received psilocybin, although it wasn't a significant decrease because it was so low to begin with. So there was no increase in psychotic or psychosis-related symptoms. And there were also significant improvements in the other domains that were looked at, which included interpersonal sensitivity, obsessive-compulsive symptoms, hostility, and somatization, which, some of those are related to anxiety or adjustment disorder or depression. but it speaks to the broad spectrum of activity that psilocybin seems to have and the wide range of behavioral health benefits that people can experience when they receive this treatment under the proper conditions.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcast. The Oncology on the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network.